Today's Perek in Tanakh is Melachim Beit, Perek Yud Gimel. Let's get a little bit of a perspective on where we are so that we can understand where we're going. Without realizing it, we have entered into the clear-cut period of the decline of the Malchut, both in the Shoresh of Malchut, the nature of where it came from, this we saw yesterday, in the violation of the essential Tanai of Malchut, which is the sufficiency of identity that allows one to be a Melech based on that which is given by others. And this was in the breakdown of Yoash, who was destroyed by it through Ammon and Moab, exactly the same way that Rut built up Yisrael from Moab and created David from Moab. But we're about to enter now the description of the destruction of the other element of Malchut, which is the Malchut of Yisrael, in which we'll see that those things were also destroyed, but in a very different way. But where did this begin? If we take a look at what's happened, there was a lovely introduction to this whole period. The introduction was both in terms of Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael. There's constant parallels, and we pointed out before, this is why the birth of one is always mentioned in terms of the Malchut of the other, because there's a back and forth that is going on here consistently throughout history. And what happens, if you think about it, is that there have been two drastically different approaches to the tikkun of the dorot that came before. One was through Yehu, and the other one was through Yoash and Yehoyada. In Malchut Yisrael, Yehu came to destroy what Omri and Ahav had built. And that was his tafkid, according to the Navi. I want this thing wiped out. And the mode by which he wiped it out was vicious, low class, in a way that would tear apart the elements of the Malchut, which was based not on the real Malchut, as Malchut Yehuda was based, but was rather based on a commitment to the nature of Yisrael as a presence on earth. In a sense, one could even say that the Malchut of Yehuda is a Malchut that expresses the idea of the ultimate achievements of Yisrael. Therefore, it's compared to the moon, which waxes and wanes, and only at the end we say David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. None of those ideas appear in Malchut Yisrael whatsoever. It's only in Malchut Yehuda. In Malchut Yisrael, there's this sense of commitment to the glory and grandeur of what Yisrael is meant to be, Be'olam Hazeh, in its success in Olam Hazeh, and its measurement is therefore not in terms of mitzvah, and not even in terms of its clear-cut Yehuda, that is to say, Kol HaKofer Bavodat Kochavim is Nikra Yehudi, but rather in a commitment to bringing this world to a level of tikkun, ultimately. And that could even allow, meanwhile, for Avodah Zarah, for the utilization of all types of drives that are meant to be sublimated and brought to an achievement in which this world can mean something. Both of them, because of that, the approach of Yehu was very Olam Hazeh oriented, was to rip out any sense of respect, decency, and even humanity when it came to how it was that Izebel and Bet Achav were treated. I mean, it was gas, Yoter. It was something you'd expect to see in horror movies, you know, having them eaten by dogs and licking the blood, and the whole thing was meant to be achieved in that fashion. You had a very, very different approach in exactly the parallel issue, which was the tikkun of those things that had gone wrong, a reflection of the breakdown in the Beit HaMikdash, the Sidrei Beit HaMikdash, the building of the Beit HaBaal in Yehuda, the entry of Avodah Zarah into Avdas Hashem, the tearing of holes in the Beit HaMikdash by Atalia. These things were approached in the opposite way, so that Yehoyada made certain that the Kohanim held hands to prevent anybody from laying a finger on Atalia. There was no mob reaction. There was instead a commitment first to destroy the Baal, a brit between the Am and the Melech and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only then an expression of the Malchus, which would be an expression of that brit. It was done with humanity, with decency, and everything bitzniut, just as is the derech of Malchut Yehuda. It was a completely different approach. And what came afterwards was directed entirely, we're shocked in a sense, by finding the details of the Siddurim for the Beis HaMikdash in the middle of Malachim. It's not really, you know, all of the dinim of Shkolim, Mesechet Shkolim, which is Darshan Dafka from a Perek Malachim, but that's the point. And that point was brought out by the beauty of the fact that the entire period goes through Yehoyada, Benayo, Yehoyada. That's basically what it is. So it begins with Benayo, Ben Yehoyada, ends up with Yehoyada, Ben Benayo. so that the 130 years are spanned from the beginning of the kilkel, in which the marriage to Bat Paro at the time of the chinuch of the Beis Hamikdash, there is where Benayel first appears, in which he's acting on behalf of Shlomo. And his son Yoyada ends up being mitakein. So that, consistent with the vision of Malchut Yehuda, we have the rebuilding and the tikkun, Lashon HaMedrashis. The moment of the kilkel was the one who was born that was destined to be mitakein. And that's exactly his years, the years of Yoyada himself. That's a remarkable vision, historically, the perspective. Is so powerful when you see it that way. When you look at the parallel, it's clear that there were two attempts of tikkun, one in terms of Yehu, one in terms of Yehoash. Both of them fail. And they fail for different reasons. They fail for the reasons that are consistent with the nature of the malchut in which they occur. So that the failure of Yehoash was a failure in the nature of malchut as an existential phenomenon, not as a political phenomenon. So is the issue of Malchut Yehuda. Today we begin the description of the downfall of Malchut Yisrael according to its own rules. Remarkably, and this is an absolutely striking thing, its downfall occurs hand in hand with a return to religion. It's remarkable. You'll notice that Elisha has not been active in this entire period. He suddenly reappears in our prayer. Not only does he reappears as a clear-cut, conscious basis of the Malchut Yisrael that never before viewed themselves as being dependent on Elisha, of having any real connection to that. It was always almost an end. There was a tremendous amount of respect. So they would go down to him, they would listen to him, and so on and so forth. But it was always, I'd rather not hear. And certainly not that I'm going to come and beg Elisha and cry over Elisha. I mean, this is outrageous. Completely different idea. The whole idea of Malchus Yisrael was to stand without any need for a religious base and to be able to act in a completely secular fashion and yet to express the concept of Yisrael. Here is where that begins to collapse. And so Bishnat Esrim V'Shalosh Shana LeYoash ben Achaziah Melech Yehuda. Now, fascinatingly, that was exactly the year that they did not, Bonin did not do the tikkun of the Avodah Beis Hamikdash back in Yehuda. It was that year that Yoachaz becomes now king. The son of Yehu becomes king on Yisrael, Bishomron, 17 Shana. He rules for 17 years. Vayas hara b'inei Adonai, vayelech achar chatot Yeravam b'nevat, asher echti et Yisrael. He does evil in Hashem's eyes. Following the chatot Yeravam b'nevat, this is the way in which we began Malchus Yisrael, with those words. Following Yeravam b'nevat. Lo sar mimenai, didn't turn aside in any way. Vayichaf Adonai b'Yisrael, and so HaKadosh Baruch Hu became angry. Vayitnein b'yad Chazael melech Aram, uv'yad ben Hadad ben Chazael, kol hayamim. And so they were bitterly defeated time after time, all of that period, until Vayichal Yoachaz et pnei Adonai. First time we ever see such a thing. So Melech Yisrael, Vayichal, I mean, it's connected, Vayichal Moshe, pnei Hashem Elokav, it's not, Vayichal is a very, very powerful lashon, which the person empties himself out, lashon of chalalim bifnim, to be the complete and total tefillah, pnei Hashem, Vayishma elav Adonai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to him, ki ra'at lachatz Yisrael, again, amazing. Because this is the language that we use by Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is what we celebrate in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. We talk about this idea. The lachatz, the response to the pressure on Yisrael. And this itself, Ki lachatz otam melech Aram, this itself is indicative of the change. And remarkably, the Gemara actually points out that this moment was a moment of massive change, according to Shmuel. It was the moment in which Schus Ovis ended. So that there was no longer a continuation of the Schus of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There was instead a Hanhoga that was built on Brit. This is how the Rabbeinu Tam understands. It's actually, I mean, there's a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos there in the Gemara and Shabbos, how to understand it. So we'll see later on the remez of the letter Tuf that was put in the existentially in the foreheads of people. This is a Machlokas. According to Shmuel, Tuf stands for Tamas Hutavot. What was that moment where Tamas Hutavot, this Maisa, Chazael, brings a raya from our parak that that must be the case? Why? Because if you look ahead, and I'm looking ahead, usually I don't do this, I'm looking ahead because, fascinatingly, the parak looks ahead. And Rashi points this out in Pasuk Yud Gimel. He says, this is really weird. Because we're writing Psukim that we're going to be getting back to in future parakim as if we've finished discussing them. So something is happening. That is what we're trying to do here. Rashi has a different reason for why we're doing it. But what we're trying to do here is sum up something, things that are interrelated with each other, put them together. Now, if you take a look at the end of the story, you see that what actually happens in Pasuk Chof Beis, in Chof Gimel, Chazael Melech Aram Lachatit Yisrael Ko Yimei Yehoachaz, Vayochan Hashem Otam, Vayirachamim Vayifen Aleim Laman Brito, Et Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, V'lo Ava Hashchita, He didn't wish to destroy Yisrael, V'lo Yishlicham Me'alpanav, and didn't throw them away Adata, until then. Rashi learns the Diak of Shmuel is from the Adata. Until this moment, but from this moment it's all over. The Rabbeinu Tam says, on the contrary, it means until the ultimate point. The Diak in the Gemara of Shmuel is Laman Brito, instead of Laman Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So the Brit is forever. The Gemara is not discussing the Brit. The Gemara is discussing the Zchut. And therefore the Diak over here is, do you need to come on to a Zechira of Brit? Or does it follow the zechus of the others? Now, lemaisa, the relationship of lachatz, tzaaka, and brit occurs right away in Agudat Shel Pesach, as we talk about. So that first vayis, it's the vayiskar brito that is triggered by the zaakat b'nei Yisrael, the lachatz v'gamani ra'iti v'gamani yadati. So that's the lachatz of shelochatzim otam. There is clearly a hanhaga that is not related to zechus. The Ramchal speaks out at great length, where he discusses the different levels of Anhaga HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one of which he calls Anhaga HaMishpat, the other one which Kabbalistically is Anhaga HaMakifim, but that there's basically, the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with us, in terms of Schar, V'onesh, things to be appropriate for us. This whole parak talks about Anhaga that's inappropriate. To be zocha without having any zechus, something which is based on the insight into the ultimate nature of Yisrael, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has committed himself to the success of this enterprise, whatever it takes. And there are times at which continuing on Hagas HaMishpat is self-defeating. Exactly in the same way Ramchal speaks this out. It's exactly in the same way. Kasher Yaser Ish Et Bino. So it gets to a point where it becomes destructive to punish your child, where you're losing far more than you're gaining. And it's at that point that any intelligent parent, obviously, attempts to provide rather than to give a sense of anger and punishment. And that's exactly the point that we have reached. There's now a level of interrelationship of Av and Ben, even to the Malchai Yisrael, in which all hope of being Zocha in terms of Mishpat is lost. The ability to respond in a real way. We've already tried that. We've tried the Yale results. We tried the most dramatic things. They haven't worked. And therefore, it's time for letting go and allowing this to survive as long as it can to provide the roots of a better future. So that this parak, together with the previous parak, is a dramatic departure from the past. Things are changing. One of the first implications of that change to Malchai Yisrael is the fact of coming to be Derech HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Vayichal, in which the person is just begging for relief. Vayitein Adonai l'Yisrael Moshiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed provides a teshua. So, okay, Rashi learns that teshua as a reference to Yoash, not our Yoash, but Yoachaz's son, as we're going to see, who has a child by the name of Yoash. And by the way, the interrelationship of the names continually really points out so powerfully to the parallel issues that are taking place. And that particular idea of Yoash, as Chazal points out, that Yoash is always a reference to Yush, despair, which you're giving up, Shenit Yashum and Avimulah. You're giving up on being able to deal with the issues on your own. But in any event, that's how Rashi learns it's a reference to his son. Lamaisa, the very fact that it doesn't say who the Moshiach is, implies that it isn't important, and that it isn't really part of what's coming to them. He provides a Moshiach. There's even there's modern commentators who suggest that the Moshiach is the changing world order. It's not a person. Because if you take a look, at the evidence, we're talking about evidence that actually mentions these kings by name among the Goyim in Ashur. So what you discover is that Ben-Hadad is being attacked by Ashur at this time from his rear. So that Hazael and Ben-Hadad have to move away from Yisrael because they have war with Ashur in the north. So that Moshiach can be now a Moshiach that's hidden inside world politics. And that's also part of the Moshiach. It even has a picture of of Tel Arima, which is near Mosul. And here he talks about Yosh HaShomrani. It's not a very good picture.
Mosul is
Nineveh. At that time. Yeah, but it wasn't in Nineveh. It's near Nineveh. So it's clear that what's going on is a changing world order. That anyway, we know historically. And that changing world order changes the place of Yisrael and its importance, so that it becomes now very much a side issue in terms of world awareness and world politics. It's not what it was one time, where we had at the time of Omri, at the time of Ahab, tremendous importance, of it, certainly the time of Shlomo. This decline is part of the nature of the decline of Yisrael into Golis, in which on the surface, the presence of Yisrael B'Olam Hazeh seems unimportant, despite the fact that everything is revolving around them. We'll see this in a very beautiful Medrash Tevan. And so, Vayitein Adonai Yisrael Moshiach Vayetzu Mitachat Yad Amram, the Aram. They managed to get out from under the hands of Aram. Vayishvu B'nei Yisrael Ba'olayim Kitmosh Hashem, remarkable. A sudden change that gave them a relief that allowed them to live in their own homes peace as once had been the case. Ach lo saru mechatot Beit Yeravam, but that didn't help to tear them away from the agalot of Beit Yeravam, asher chatiyat Yisrael. Bahalach, that was the way that he had gone. Vegam ha'asheram, that original Asherah, it was still standing. It doesn't mean that they worshipped it, but they didn't go out to uproot the whole idea of the fertility goddess. They never uprooted it. And you know, this was all part of a process of reducing, as the Gemara Chagiga says, the best thing for Yisrael in Golis is poverty. Kol Yisrael should never be too successful. And this is actually what we tell Geirim. So Rambam brings Halacha, V'zeh Shatirei Yisrael, the way they are, looked down upon and empty-handed in Olam Hazeh, because they can't handle it. It's because it takes them away from their main focus, as Ein Lechem Bnei Olam Haba, El Yisrael, and they're not able to handle it. That was the approach of the Malchei Yisrael, was to believe that they could handle it. And they failed. Kilo hishir le'yachaz am. Do you know what was left after all the fighting with Hazael? Im chamishim parashim v'asara rechet v'aseret alafim ragli. You know what was left of the army? The grand army of thousands of tanks that Achav was able to supply. The war is far away from the borders of Eretz Yisrael. 50 riders, 10 chariots, and a total of 10,000 foot soldiers, and that's all that was left. Ki ibdam melech Aram v'yisimim ki'afar ladush. Because the king of Aram had wiped out everything else and had turned Yisrael into dirt. And this afar ladush becomes so significant. There's so many midrashim, so many references to this, that it goes back to Avram Avinu, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu compares your children to afar ha'aretz. That afar ha'aretz means that, yes, they can be nimshal kochavim, and they can be nimshal to the dirt. Were they nimshal to the dirt? They're dirt ladush, to be stepped over, to be crushed, to be looked down upon, to be assumed to be nothing but dirt by the Umas Olam. And this is the makor of the Medrash, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram, just like the kochavim are elyonim al kol olam, kach banecha elyonim al kol. But kishe'inam osim ritzoni, ben kishem she'afar lemata mikol olam, v'akom medayshim otam, kachem, she'ne'amar ki ibdam melech haram, v'yisimeim ke'afar ladush. So this becomes the expression we talked about, tamas chosavos, according to Shmuel. This is actually what was shown to Avram Avinu as what could happen, even as part of the Brit. The Brit is to make them like Afar. So he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ribon kol olamim, does this mean that this is the way you're going to leave them? This is permanent? Which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, no, chas v'shalom. The idea of v'kachat ha-menicham, amar lo, never. Shenema hitnari me'afar kumi. So we see that Yishayahu sees the vision. You went down to the dust, get yourselves together and stand up again. But that this is part of the process that was actually Zachar Hashem et Brito that we see at the end. That Brit itself included Vayisimim Ke'afar Ladush. So it's a very, very dramatic, in historical terms, it's a very dramatic moment. When people just read through the paragraphs, because they list the names and the same old things going on again. But it's an extremely powerful paragraph when we sense the currents that are going underneath it. V'yeter divrei Yoachaz v'chol asher asau gvurato, the other things that Yoachaz did, and the gvura that he expressed, and we're going to see later elements of where what went on in the period of Yoachaz. Alohim k'tuvim al sef divrei hayamim l'malchei Yisrael, v'yishkav Yoachaz im avotav, v'yikberuhu b'shomron, v'yimloch Yoash b'no tachtav. And so he died, was buried in Shomron, and his son Yoash became king in his place. As opposed to Divrei Hayamim, which we just said in the Pasuk, if you want to know the details of the history, you can look into Divrei Hayamim. The Elements of Malachim is a book of deconstructing Malchus, not of history. And therefore it's a discussion of people, the way in which Malchut now has affected the reality of the people that are the ones that express it. And the beauty of the book, we saw this originally in the Medrash about the comparison of Malchut to the moon in waxing and waning. The beauty of the book is keep pulling out plugs. And with each plug that you pull out, you recognize what is missing and how it affects the entirety of the Malchut. So that what we did, talking about the decline and in the end the complete deconstruction of the nature of Malchut Beit David based on the insufficiency of identity on a personal level. But that's because the Malchut Beit David is fundamentally built of its recognition of itself as an emergent phenomena, and therefore its connection is with, as we saw just now with Yoyada, its connection is with the totality, the bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at its center. And that becomes now the makor of the brit between the Am and the Melech. And it's all covenantally oriented, which is not the case of Malchut Yisrael at all. Malchut Yisrael are conceptual Malachim, that they take an idea, they're taking the idea of Yisrael, they're not expressive necessarily of the Rotzen of the Am. As a matter of fact, we find, you'll notice the tremendous difference between the end of the Yehu and the end of the Atalia. There's a tremendous difference. In the end of Atalia, back in Yehuda, everybody is happy. There's a tremendous celebration because there's a personal involvement in what's going on in the Melucha. This is me. When Yehoash is there, there's a Shas Simcha in the loss of Atalia. You don't find any Simcha in what it was that Yehu does. He's now asserting a new conceptual basis for control. That's all. And he does it with all types of political machinations and viciousness and so on, which is to be expected when you're trying to take control with an idea. So it's a totally different aspect. Remarkably, the buttons or the cords that were disconnected from Malchus Yisrael are shown in this parak to leave the Malchus at its core as religious individuals, which we never would have thought. In other words, we didn't note, other than in the immense kavod that was given by both Malchut Yisrael and Malchut Yehuda to the Nevi'im, but certainly there was never that there was an interest in Nevi'im. There's never a desire for Malchut Yisrael to talk to Nevi'im, unless it was a question of knowing a specific issue about the future. I don't view the Navi as the source of my power and the source of my justification in the world or the source of my vision of reality, right? On the contrary, no, just leave me alone. This guy's an enemy. I see him as an enemy. I want to ask him. He always says the wrong thing. Literally, Akhav says that word for word. I don't want to talk about him. He hates me. I don't want to ask him. I don't want to hear his advice. And that's because, especially in the Elio Akhav constant showdowns, which we saw as a dualism, there was a conscious commitment, which I want to point out to you, comes all the way back from Yerava. The beginning of Malchus Yisrael is a conscious commitment not to be involved with the Beit HaMikdash, right? But in a more profound way, it's not to be involved with the religious center at all. It's to take the drives for religion that are viewed by Yerovam as being essentially Avodah Zorah-oriented and to turn them into Avodah Zorah. This is what you want. If this makes you happy, go worship an Egel. What do you need more than that for? So there was that cynicism that was there, that he got Achia Shilonit to sign off on, if you recall, that drove Yehu crazy later because, what am I going to do? I can't be more from than Achia Shilonit. So there was this conscious recognition that what we need to focus on is the secular element of Yisrael that is still dedicated to the nature of tikkun, to the nature of expressing that there is a mice of branches that needs to be cared about. And ultimately, people will grow up into some level of brit. I don't really care about looking at their tzitzis at this point. And that's exactly the way they acted all the years. We've now come to the point yesterday where we saw the incredible reduction in the power and in the presence that Aram had caused, which you're down to 10,000 soldiers. You're down to a couple of tanks. There's no longer any ability to express the conceptual models of Yisrael. Remarkably, what's left is a man who comes to pray to God, Vayechal, or, as we're going to see, that comes and begs Elisha. but it cries over the death of Elisha. Elisha hasn't even been present all of these years. Remember, at this point, it's 65 years almost from the beginning of the Pi'ilut of Elisha when he first appears and is the one that attempts to bring the two issues together. We haven't heard a word from him for years now. All of a sudden, we go back to the story of the death of Elisha. It's because of that. And this serves as an introduction to the second account. It's because of that, I believe, this is not how Rashi learns it, but it's because of that that we do a very strange thing. We jump ahead now. We talk about the Malachim to come, and even though the fact is, and we say that they died and that they were buried, and then in the next parak, we talk about them again. Or even in this parak, we talk about them again when it comes to, I mean, we never did something like this before. Things were arranged in the order of the events. Now, for some reason, we need to put together these things. Okay, so Rashi says maybe it's just to avoid being mazkir in Yonim of Avodah Zarah immediately with the death of Elisha. That's very unlikely. It's much more mistaken that what we're looking at over here is a compression of the issues that were all part of the particular decline that we're referring to over here, where we've pulled the plug of Chashivut, and we need to bring out the way in which, amazingly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to Yisrael in those two ways. And we saw yesterday, we talked about the Gemara and Shabbos, that, as Tosfos points out, there's two completely different anhagas. There's the anhaga of Zechut Avot. The raya from here, from this parak, is that there's no more Zechut Avot. That's Shmuel's raya. Ad. But there's still Brit, and Brit is a totally different thing. So that it's the very fact that we can no longer act Efes Atzur V'Azov, we can no longer do what we need to do on a secular level, that maintains the nature of the Brit. And if you think about it, the original Brit did not include any level of Mishpat. In other words, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a Brit with Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov, it is never conditional. Doesn't say, if you're good, then we'll do this, and if you're bad, then we'll do this. The only time that we get into good and bad is in terms of Kabbalah Torah. So there we're talking about the nature of Hanhagas HaMishpat, the way the Ramchal puts it, in which there's a direct relationship between your Maisim to the things that happen. That's over here. In terms of the way that God now treats Malchus Yisrael, it's totally irrelevant that they are completely degenerate in terms of keeping mitzvahs. All that's important is the initial Brit with Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. It's remarkable. So this, again, as many of those who set to order the inyanim of the Kabbalistic approach of Hanhaga that distinguishes between Makifim and Hanhagas HaMishpat, they all speak about this parak particularly as the moment of change. Because you can see over here the most remarkable thing. By the end of this parak, Yisrael is restored to its original boundaries at the time of its greatest tiferet. No details are given us as to how this is achieved or precisely who was involved. But you've got over here an over 50-year period in which everything is great again, for no particular reason. Why? Because they've been so reduced, and there was no longer any point in reducing it further, because nothing was changing. So, what the heck? If these people are committed to making a go of it as Yisrael, let them. And that, of course, is very, very much on Hanhagas Zmanenu, which you find that it's the very fact. You want to say Yisrael B'tach B'Hashem. Does that mean that anybody's going to do tshuva? That anybody's going to start keeping mitzvahs? No. But the very fact that you're coming along now is Ephes Atzur V'Azur. There's nobody to talk to. There's nobody to look to. There's nobody that you can expect to do anything. People are complete and total ignoramuses and idiots. But if this is what represents the nature of the Brit, so let them win. Why not? This is the Chanoti, basically. The Chanoti et Asher Achon. There's a Hanhaga of Chanina, where it's only the love that counts. We don't look to Maisim. So that, I mean, if you take a look in the, this is actually taken from the Tomer Dvorah, although it's in the Chesed Avram. So he speaks about the Lo Hechazik La'adapo, which is the Erech HaPayim that we find in the... So this is Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machazik Af. And in its Yevatel Kaso Afilu Shelo Yashuv HaAdam, Kamo Shematzinu B'Yerovam Ben Yoash, which is the Sarek, as we'll see in a moment. Shechzir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gvul Yisrael, Ve'em Ayu Avdim Agalim, V'richam aleim, but in any way lo shavu. So you'll say, "In kein lomarachim aleim." It's mitnei midazu shalachazik
lad apo.
Adarab machlish apo. And even though the chet is there, what's the point of being manish? Hakadosh Baruch Hu mitnahig berakot ubekashot, as required, HaKol HaTovat Yisrael. So that we have over here a change, a profound change, not only in the Hanagas Hashem, but also we expose the Melucha so that underneath it there is a heart that we already saw in the previous parak. We already saw that even those that had been loichim against the Beis HaMikdash, there was still the Hekdeshim, Asher Hekdeshim, that needed to be sent to Chazael. And here too, in Yisrael, we find exactly the same thing. So that in the end, yesterday, we speak about the coming down of the Melech and begging for Vayichal. So even though Vayasara b'nei Hashem, Vayelech ha-chachatot Yeravam b'nevat, we have Yehoahaz at the end, Vayichal Yehoahaz at b'nei Hashem. So now, to continue from there, we're up to Posek Yud. So again, we've pretended that Yoash b'no is now Yimlo. And we're going to pretend that this is the story of Yoash. In fact, we're going to get back to him. Bishnat 37 shana leYoash melech Yehuda, malach Yehoash ben Yehoahaz al Yisrael b'Shomron 16 shana. Now, this doesn't make any sense. This is absolutely impossible if you add up the years. Because, I mean, we just said in the first pasuk that it was in the 23rd year of Yoash. That was the year of the problem of being mechazik to Berek Abayi. It says in the 23rd year of Yoash ben Achazyahu, Yehoahaz became king, the son of Yehu became king, and he was molech for 17 years. If he was molech for 17 years, 17 plus 23 is 40. If it's 40, then it means it's in the last year here of Yoash Melech Yehuda, who was molech for 40 years. And here it claims it's b'shloshim sheva shana leYoash of Yehuda. So this doesn't make any sense. Unless we learn, and this is the Malbim's Raya, he views the entire construction of the parak around this idea, that when it's said before, without identifying, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ma'amid lehem, Yeshua, and it didn't say who or what that was, Vayitin Hashem Yisrael Moshia in Pasuk Hey, it's a reference specifically to Yehoash ben Yehoahaz, which must mean that his son Yehoash was put on the throne by his father 3 years earlier, and that's when he felt that he was the source of the Kilkel, and that there'd be no way that he could possibly win over Hazael, gave over the throne to Yoash, who was supposed to do the fighting, and therefore, here in the context of the destruction of Aram, we find that Yoash comes to power in the 37th year. That's the only way to understand it. Otherwise, we find other steers later. So the Malbim uses this as the explanation of why in the world we're bringing in the story of Yoash as a complete story here when it really only begins later. Because it's to indicate who the Moshiach was. So it's a continuation of the Moshiach. That's how he understands. So he was Melech b'Shomron, 16 shana. Vayaseh hara b'nei Adonai, losar mikol chatot yiravam b'nevat, asher echati et Yisrael b'hala. He continued to do exactly the same as Yeravam. V'yeter divrei Yoash, v'chal asher asah, u'gvurato, all the other things that he did, and with the fact that he was nilcham im amatzia melech Yehuda, which is a further disintegration. So he actually fought with Amatzia, the king of Yehuda. All of this, Elohim k'tuvim al sefer divrei hayamim l'malchei Yisrael. V'yishkav Yoash im avotav, v'yeravam yashav al kiso. And so Yoash died. Yeravam now becomes king. He was a son. Vayikaver Yoash b'Shomroni Malchei Yisrael, and he's buried with the Malchei Yisrael. Again, this is not true. He did not die here. This is now just a very brief recapitulation of his life. He's about to appear already in the next pasuk. Okay, so this is obviously not the standard. There's something happening here that is meant to give us the sense of the immense change this parak represents. And here, as a complete, appears to be complete non sequitur. Ve'elisha chala et chal Yoash yamud bo. Vayered elav Yoash melech Yisrael vayef kal panav. This is an astonishing pasuk. Totally and completely out of the context, out of the mode, out of the atmosphere, the ambience of everything that we've seen before in the relationship of Malchei Yisrael to Elisha. Here, Elisha is now mortally ill, and Chazal are derish from him that indeed until this time, no one ever survived a mortal illness. So it was only Elisha who had until now two times survived. That was the story with Gehazi and the story with the kids with the bears. And so Yoash comes and cries on him. Vayomer avi avi rechev Yisrael ufarashav. So here we see the depth of the recognition of the ultimate power of Malchus Yisrael, even though they revert. It's exactly the same today. Intelligent people don't talk about God all day. And as the Rambam points out, these guys who talk about God all day are usually idiots. I've never met people that are further from God than the ones that are always saying Baruch Hashem. See, actually writes this. These guys, the more they talk, the less they really have any connection. And indeed, that was the approach of the Malchus Yisrael. I don't need to wear God on as an armband. So the point over here is suddenly to find him now being Bocha over Elisha means that when we've pulled out all the other plugs and the elements of Malchus are not coming out, we're left with his core. But this is his core, which is of itself an astonishing thing. The very fact that Elisha appears here is also, in terms of its historic process, it's also so beautiful because it was Elisha that had created Hazael. Elisha was the one who had made Hazael king, and it's Hazael now who was destroying everything. It was Elisha who told Hazael that I know what you're going to be doing. And Hazael couldn't believe that he could ever be such an animal. Right? He says, what am I, a dog? And it's Elisha now that needs to be in charge of the destruction of Hazael with his own death. So as long as Elisha was there, so was Hazael, because Hazael was also drawing from Elisha's power. It's remarkable. And those that were destroying Omri, they were all drawing from Elisha's power. On two levels, this is the wrap-up of his life. One of which is remarkable that we're going to see, which is the Pishnayim Miruchacha, which is the story of the resurrection of the one that's thrown into his grave, which appears to be, again, a non-sequitur. We'll see why that is central. And the other is that it's here, as he dies, that he gives over the power to be Mizgaber over Hazael. And so as Yoash comes and cries over him, Vayomer lo Elisha, Elisha tells him, Kach keshet v'chitzim, bring a bow and arrows. Vaykach alav keshet v'chitzim. Vayomer lo Melech Yisrael. And so he tells now Yoash as Melech Yisrael, Harkev yadchala keshet, Harkev yadav. Put your hand now on the bow. And he does. Vayasem Elisha yadav al yedei ha-melech. He puts his own hands on the king's hands. Vayomer, and he tells him, Ptach ha-chalon keva. Open up the window towards the east, towards Aram. Vayiftach, and he does. Vayomer Elisha, yere, shoot. Vayor, and he shoots. Vayomer, and as he shoots, Elisha says, Chetz Teshua Adonai, Chetz Teshua V'Aram. This is meant to be now a arrow that is going to be the arrow which is empowered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the arrow that is going to strike Aram. And in doing so, the Malbim learns that because of the fact that he had empowered Aram, gentlemen, damn it, due to the fact that he had empowered Aram verbally, he needs to empower now the destruction of Aram with a maisa. Because Dibor is not motzi mechal Dibor, only a maisa is motzi mechal Dibor. La halacha. So he needed to do this. And so he calls it a chetz teshua. We find exactly the same thing, by Gidon. Cherev la'ashem v'legidon. Right? So over here, he's saying the same thing. It's a chetz la'ashem, and it's a chetz against Aram. So it's the same idea that we find there. And he tells him that this is going to be the Ikita Taramba Afek at Kalei. Now you remember that Afek was the place in which the original victory over Aram, where everything was ruined, right? Because there was the opportunity that was given to Ahav, in which he captures now Ben Hadad and he gives him back, gives him his freedom. My dear brother. So it was the beginning of liberalism. And there, even though they had wiped them out, they had murdered, they had destroyed 100,000 people of Aram in Afek. And he lets them go. And it's there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's it, it's over, it's with you. So now that the Teshua should come to Dafki in Afek is once again full circle that Elisha is bringing here. Vayomer, and then he says, Kach hachitzi, take now the arrows, whatever is left, vayikach. Vayomer l'melech Yisrael, Hach arts. Take those arrows and smash them against the ground. Now, there's two meanings to this. Most learn Hach arts as that it's an indication, it's a way of showing that you're going to smash Aram to the ground. However, a more profound approach is that Hach Artsa is smash the arrows on the ground. In other words, that there would be a possibility, just like there was before Elisha himself, if you recall. His earlier defeat of Aram was the Star Wars defeat. in which they came into the city, and he says, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And he just handles them like that without any need for chitzim at all. So it may be that what he's saying is, I gave you a chetz teshuah, but you don't need chitzim. Take the chitzim and smash them against the ground. If you're willing to approach this whole thing not through chitzim, then there could be a completely different approach, which will be much more effective than what it is that you would do in any kind of war. If that's the case, then that means that the way in which the Melech responds, which he doesn't want to destroy the chitzim, is very reasonable. So he's only vayach shalosh pamim ve'amot. He does that three times. Now, he doesn't respond in any particular way to them. What he should have done is just continued to act until he's told to stop. Vayiktzof alav ish Elohim, and so Elisha gets angry at him. Vayomer, he said, I didn't tell you to stop. Why didn't you keep going? Had you done that, azikita taromat kale, you would have been able to completely lord it over Aram, wipe out the malchut. Yata shalosh pe'amim takeyat Aram. You yourself are now committed three times to war against Aram and to win. Vayomat Elisha, vayikbru. And so Elisha dies, and they bury him. And it was at that moment that Gdudei Moav, Yovo Ba'aretz, Bashana. It was then that there were people that were coming from Aram, that were invading at this point, at the time that the new year had come, or at that moment, after Tosefta Darshans, up until that time, they were never Gedudim. You notice during the entire period in which Elisha was alive, we don't hear about the Gedudim, which means that as long as Elisha was there, when he was calling him Rechav Yisrael for Hashav, that indeed there was a Rechav Yisrael for Hashav, and that nobody dared, as long as Elisha was alive, to attempt to invade on the basis of Gedudim. Vayim kovrim ish, and so there they are, whoever it is, burying a important man, Chazal Doresh. Ish is usually a specific individual. Vinei ra'u et agdud, they see these Moavim that are coming back in. Vayashlichu et ish bekever Elisha. They throw the man into the kever where Elisha is. Vayelach vayiga ish batzmot Elisha vayachi vayakam araglav. And so when they threw him in, he comes into contact with the body of Elisha and immediately stands up and walks away. Now, Chazal Darshan, walks away does not mean comes back to life. Walks away just to get him away from Elisha. So first, on a simple level, there's two things that are going on over here, which is that the koach of Elisha is meant to apply after his death. Because he puts his hands on the hands of the king and he shoots the arrow, which means that you're crying over my death. I'm empowering you now. And indeed, we learn out from this story of the resurrection of this guy, whoever he is, which we'll talk about in a moment, that Gdolim Tzadikim b'mitatam yoter mibichayim, because when Elisha wanted to be Mechaye, the Ben Shulamit, it was with this tremendous amount of problems to get it done. And here, the guy touches him and comes back alive. Or, this is the closure of the Pishnayim Yiruchacha. Where did he ever do two times Chiyat HaMitim? Perhaps this is for that purpose. But there's a beautiful medrash that identifies the person. Vayim Kovrim Ish is that boy that he had originally been Mechaya. So he was meant to be buried near Elisha, which is why they were there. Because Elisha had brought him to life. Elisha had given him the bracha. And now they were going to bury him near Elisha. So it's the closure of the story of the actual original Chiyas HaMesim of Elisha that takes place over here. But there's a Pirkei Reb Eliezer that sees it as closure in an ultimate sense, because they identify the person over here as, and what he says is like this, the Amar Rabbi Azariah, Teidalcha Koach HaTzedakah, Mishalom Ben Tikva. Shalom Ben Tikva was from the Gedolei Hador, and he used to do tremendous amounts of tzedakah. He would sit there with water bottles, giving water to anybody that came into the Petach HaYir. And because of that, and he was married to Chulda, because it says Chulda is Eshet Shalom Ben Tikva, it was because of that that Chilkiyahu HaKohen could come to Chulda later, and this is at the time of the Korban. And what happens? This Shalom Ben Tikva ends up giving birth to Hananel. Because he calls Hanamel, Hanamel ben Shalom. That's the only Shalom that we know. Hanamel ben Shalom becomes the key to the Geula, to the ultimate Geula, the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, because that's now what Yirmiyahu is told to use as the siman of selling a field And that's Dodo, Ben Dodo, Yigaleno, the whole connection to the original vision of Rut. So it comes out now that in the last moments of Elisha, we're already introduced to Hanamel Ben Shalom. That's already a very, very conceptual way of looking at it. Okay, but the pasuk specifically leaves it out of us. Okay. Because the El Melech Aram lachatz at Yisrael kol yemei Yehoahaz, and we're suggesting, as the Malbim does, that Yehoahaz was aware of the fact that it's his own relationship that means that Hazael wins his long time around, which is why he gave it over to Yoash. Vayochan Adonai Otam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Yachanetz v'chanoti et asher achon. Vayochan means matnat chinam, without its being a response to anything that the person has done. Vayirachamein, vayifin alayim, the man brito. And vayirachamein, by the way, people think vayirachamein means has mercy. They don't understand that the roots in Aramaic of rachim is love. Arachamcha Hashem iski. So that when we talk about in the Gemara, the Omar Rachmana, so you know, in the art scroll or translator, is the merciful one. What does the merciful one have to do with Torah? Not the merciful one, it's the lover. That's the point. So over here, the idea of the chanina, which is mitzias chen, yirachamein, is the expression of love. Vayifan alayim, and he turned to them, despite the fact that they were so distant. Leman brito, Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Not because of any schus, but because of the original bris that transcends Anagas HaMishpat. V'lo avah hashkitam. And he did not want to destroy them. V'lo yishlicham mi'al panav. Did not throw them away from in front of his face. Ad atan, till that time. V'yomot Hazael melech Aram. V'yimloch ben Hadad b'no tachtav. Hazael died. Ben Hadad is actually Ben Hadad III. Became b'no tachtav. And insanely, Vayashav Yehoash ben Achaz, Vayikach et ha'arim miyad ben Hadad ben Chazael, Asher lakach miyad Yehoahaz aviv b'milchama. We're not here given over the details. But after having been reduced to almost nothing, he was able to win back all of the cities from ben Hadad that had been taken away from Yehoahaz in the wars. Shalosh pa'amim, he called Yehoash. There were three battles in which he won. By Yosha et Arei Yisrael, was able to bring back all of the Arei Yisrael that had been lost.